Thank you. I'll try to make this as quick as possible. I'm sure everybody's ready to get out of here for a break for the evening. I would like to start by I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here tonight, as well as Philip Johnson, my co-author on this paper, and as well as everybody from the Department of Ag Economics. We appreciate the opportunity to be at the Beltwide Conference and present some of the projects that we have going on. One of those is energy and carbon, some considerations for High Plains cotton, looking at the energy consumption and resulting carbon emission for cotton in the Texas Panhandle. I'm not sure it's necessary to spend a tremendous amount of time talking about the changes and trends in terms of energy efficiency, conservation, and CO2 emission with relations to greenhouse gases and global warming. There has been a tremendous effort recently and some new agendas proposed to try to improve some situations regarding that. Most notably is the proposed legislation of cap and trade. That has evolved here recently and is likely to be with us for some time. Now, without spending a lot of time on what cap and trade is and what it's going to mean, there is certainly one thing that is certain. While there is a lot of certain uncertainties in cap and trade, one thing is certain is that Texas High Plains cotton is certainly not going to be on some sort of exclusion list from any sort of impacts through this cap and trade legislation. So what we're wanting to do as a result of these changes that are occurring and could continue to occur is try to develop energy and carbon audits for irrigated cotton systems in the Texas Panhandle to try to understand three things so that we can better prepare for these changes that are inevitably going to be upon us at some point in time. That is energy efficiency and consumption, the resulting carbon emissions from the energy being consumed in the input allocation process, and then also the economic and production efficiency along with those other two comparisons. Really what this does at this stage is it allows for sort of four aspects to be compared simultaneously. Of course, irrigation efficiency and economic efficiency or capability is very important, but now we have another aspect that we also need to be considering potentially in production decisions, and that is how is the energy and carbon interaction occurring. Quickly on some of the methods and classification of energy, there's really three types of energy and related carbon that is classified in the literature: direct, indirect, and embedded. Direct energy or carbon emission is typically tied to fossil fuels being consumed directly on the farm. You can think of that in the form of diesel fuel being burned to produce or diesel fuel being burned in farm operations and the resulting carbon emissions that come from that diesel fuel being burned, or in the case of the Texas High Plains, electricity being utilized to run the center pivot as seen in the picture. Indirect energy or carbon comes from all other inputs that go into farm production, such as fertilizer and chemicals. Somewhere off-site, there was fossil fuel burned to produce those inputs, such as natural gas and fertilizer production and other chemicals. So there's an indirect energy and carbon input. Embedded deals with the amount of energy and carbon associated with the manufacturing and production of capital assets, such as farm machinery and irrigation equipment. In this study, we only looked at direct and indirect energy and carbon. As I mentioned earlier, energy and carbon are tied very heavily to one another. The more energy that is consumed in a production system, the more carbon that's going to be emitted. As direct and indirect energy is utilized in the production process, CO2 is emitted in the atmosphere somewhere along that process. A little bit on methods and data. Jay Yates just spent quite a bit of time talking about the TAWC. I'm not going to reiterate that. The field level observations that we utilized in this study did come out of the TAWC. We had 102 field level cotton observations. Those were all irrigated on the TAWC project for 2005 to 2008. All of this data was compiled using what's known as the process method. Basically, what that allows is we have very detailed information coming from these sites, as Jay indicated, and we can correlate coefficients to each of those inputs for carbon or energy in a very detailed or audit method. And most of those coefficients were developed by Lowell and Pimentel, and we simply applied them to the inputs that we had observed on the TAWC. For this purpose, we looked at three different irrigated cotton systems, no dry land. We had five different technologies, drip, three kinds of sprinkler, and conventional furrow observation as well. Before we get into the results too far, the energy values that are going to be presented are going to be presented in megajoules. That can be interpreted, that's simply a measure or a unit of work. It can be interpreted as something similar to maybe a gallon of diesel or possibly a barrel of oil or a kilowatt hour. It's simply a engineering measure of work. The carbon emissions are going to be presented in pounds of carbon emitted per acre. Both of those are on per acre basis. Again, the carbon emitted is simply the carbon emitted from the energy consumed on the farm or indirectly off the farm. Probably the most important thing to keep in mind as we go through this is not a carbon footprint study. That is the next step in this process. This is merely the amount of energy consumed and the resulting carbon emissions that occur to produce 1 acre of irrigated cotton based on these observations. It does not include the second half of two major pieces in the carbon scene, is the sequestration or carbon being pulled out of the atmosphere by the biomass production of the plant itself. Kind of an overall view of the results. Across the top axis, you'll see the five technologies that we investigated in this study. It's fairly clear right off the bat that the drip system, SDI, had the highest yield of 3.6 bales per acre. We have some very substantial yields coming off of that. However, it also took the highest amount of water to produce that at 15.5 inches, again, to get that 3.6 bales. All of the sprinkler systems are very similar. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the conventional furrow or row water. It's kind of a dying technology in our area, and the numbers are traditionally the lowest in nearly every category you look at. In terms of the energy consumed on the farm, if we look at megajoules per acre, one thing to certainly note is to produce such a high yield and to put out that much water is going to consume a lot of energy. The two primary components in energy consumption and the resulting carbon emission are, in this study and typically in the High Plains region, are electricity to run irrigation systems and fertilizer. It takes a tremendous amount of natural gas to produce fertilizer, so the more water you put out, the more fertilizer you're going to put out. Thus, those systems or technologies are going to be the highest. While the specific numbers aren't all that specific and detailed in terms of picking out that 11,000 is 3,000 megajoules higher than 8,100, I really want to just focus on the relativity among all of these observations, thus that the 11,000 megajoules on drip is the highest. Since there is such a high correlation between megajoules of energy consumed and carbon output, you can also see down here that the total carbon emitted per acre is the highest for drip as well. And looking at the economic summary, when you make 3.6 bales per acre, you're going to have a fairly high gross revenue. We can see that over here of over $1,100 per acre in terms of gross revenue received on the farm for those years. The sprinkler systems are all very similar. Again, conventional furrows a low, but again, going back to the energy side, it takes quite a bit of investment in terms of cash expense to produce 3.6 bales per acre. So you can see that the drip system had the highest cost of $917 per acre to get that crop out of the field. And it also exhibited the highest net returns of $221 per acre. Those first two tables were general summaries. They consisted of total value numbers. They're great for illustration, but what we really want to focus on is this table right here in terms of efficiency. If we break down these sites in terms of three categories, dollars, irrigation, and energy, and the resulting carbon, we wind up with some measures of efficiency that we can determine potential ideal systems or technologies in cotton production on a very broad category of classification. When we look at gross margin, defined here, that is total revenue less cash field expenses. That does not include any fixed expenses incurred on the farm. Gross margin dollars per acre is the highest for the drip system at $343 per acre. If you look at irrigation efficiency in terms of how many pounds you can generate per inch of water, the drip system is no longer the major competitor there. It then shifts over to the LIPA system or the low energy precision application sprinkler system at 130 pounds per inch of water. As Jay pointed out, that's very important in the Texas Panhandle in that we have to get the most bang for our buck because of the limiting water resource. Going to gross margin in terms of dollars per inch, going back to the water issue, we need to get as much money as we can out of each inch of water we apply. The LIPA system then takes the efficiency measure on that standpoint. When we look at energy per bale, again, these top three numbers, we're wanting those to be as high as possible. These lower two categories here, we're wanting them as low as possible to reduce potential global warming effects. In terms of energy and megajoules per bale, the drip system was the lowest simply because it had the highest yield of 3.59 bales per acre. It's interesting to note that the LIPA system is not too far behind it, only 30 megajoules difference between those two, and the same concept on carbon. If we're looking at the lowest impact for carbon emissions, it's actually the LISA system, but we can also see a very similar impact for the LIPA system. So what we wind up with is several categories of breakdown in terms of efficiency. The drip system did generate the highest revenue per acre, make the landlord very happy. However, the LIPA system tends to be the most efficient in all measures evaluated. You might have to do a little fudging on a couple of those numbers, but if you're wanting to pick one technology that is the most efficient in terms of all those categories evaluated, it appears to be the LIPA system, particularly with respect to yield and revenue generated per inch of water and energy consumption and the resulting emissions. One note on that is that I do believe the drip system has substantial potential. I believe we're still on the learning curve of getting the technology of subsurface drip irrigation fully managed, so to speak, in the Texas Panhandle, as the producer still has a hard time walking out into the field and sort of parting the cotton and seeing dry ground. So we might actually have an over-application of water in that case. Some more conclusions, more with respect to the carbon and energy side. Impacts of the cotton industry will depend on its relativity to other row crops. In the next phase of this study, we're wanting to bring in observations from the TAWC for corn and wheat, sorghum, cattle, grass, to help understand, again, how cotton compares in sort of the economics and irrigation, as well as the energy and carbon factors compared to other crops. So where the cap and trade legislation takes this process is going to depend on how cotton compares to other crops. It is certainly possible that producers could benefit from cap and trade in some manner, but there's also the potential for some downfall. As I mentioned, future research plans tend to calculate the actual footprint, which is a net impact where we look at the input side, which I've presented here, and then we now have the technology on the TAWC to look at the interaction of the biomass and the plant itself in terms of carbon sequestration and how much carbon is being pulled out of the air. If we take those two components together and net them out, we will actually have a true carbon footprint, and we're hoping to have that done potentially maybe within the next year to two for all crops observed in the TAWC project. So with that, try to make that as fast as possible. I appreciate your time, and be glad to answer any questions.
Thanks.